Everyone dreams about living an uncommon life, but how we define that dream is very different for each of us. And for most, it's a lifelong pursuit. Welcome to the Uncommon Life Project podcast. We're going to introduce you to people who are living that life or enjoying the journey to get there. We're going to also give you some tools, tricks, and tips for starting or accelerating your own efforts to live an uncommon life, a life worth celebrating and savoring. Please welcome your hosts, Brian Dewhurst and Philip Ramsey.
Hello and welcome everybody to another episode of the Uncommon Life Project, where I'm your host, Philip Ramsey.
I am Brian Dewhurst.
And
Aaron Kramer.
Oh my goodness. We got three microphones in one room because we got some fun things to talk about. Well, welcome, Aaron.
Thanks. It's fun.
You've done podcasts with me before, but we've never done a three.
We've never done the trio.
The trio. I feel like we should start harmonizing. Okay. Here's what we're going to talk about. I had a friend, shout out to Alan Hahn. He wants to start a podcast. All he wants to do is talk about challenges that people have faced. And I was like, that is so brilliant. I think we all should get in a room, talk about the challenges that we've had in our lives, what we learned from them, who helped us through it, and like how that we are benefiting from it, because trials produce endurance and character. That's biblical. We've always said that. And in Uncommon Life, or Uncommon Wealth, I should say, we see a lot of people who go through trials and come out stronger than they ever have been. So I thought it would be fun, hit record, talk about some trials in our life, what we've learned now. And why wouldn't we all three do it? Come on. I think it's great. It's vulnerability to its finest. You know us, Uncommon Wealth. That's what we're all about. So, okay, who wants to start? What comments do you want to start with? You don't need to say the first trial, but like,
well, I know the common comment I want to make, because I love this stuff, like wholeheartedly. But I will sit there and say my personality, you guys can disagree with me. Like, I love seeing all these self-help stuff that's going on, but you see like these comments like, oh, you know, like if you're under pressure, it creates a diamond. You're going to be a diamond. You're going to do these things. And as we get into these subjects and as we share our stories, like, please know you're never a diamond. Okay. You're never shiny. Like when you get through the, like walking through the fire, like, no, you still are like, you're not a diamond until like, you know, you're at the pearly gates and God says, you are a diamond. Ooh. Okay. Now I'm a diamond.
All right.
While you're walking the earth, you're not a diamond.
Right.
You're just working because it's constant work.
Right. Yeah. We're all human.
Yeah.
The diamond gets made from the polishing, the cutting, you know, at the end. There's still a lot to go to buy a purchased diamond.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You might be a diamond, an uncut diamond.
Yeah.
But you're not a cut diamond.
Yeah.
And we aren't either.
Yeah.
Okay. So who's going to start out? I think, Aaron, you have a good one. I definitely could start. Brian's super excited about this topic. Yeah.
Can't wait.
I can start.
All right.
Well, okay. So my biggest challenge goes into like two things. I have a lot of them, but like the ones I feel like I'll share are like growing up. Let's take it back. I just officially got diagnosed with dyslexia and ADHD because, you know, for tests aren't easy, and we always have tests in our industry.
Yep.
But so I didn't know this for a long time, but so growing up in school and stuff, that wasn't fun. So, you know, we all know how kids can be.
Right. Not knowing that you might have something that's a learning disability.
Yeah.
They would just call you
stupid.
Right.
You know,
right.
I mean, it's what it is. It's like to the point where like you grow up and you're like, yeah, I'm stupid. So, and you think this because you get told it for you get told something long enough and you get enough affirmation because like you're going through school and school's not exactly designed for the way you think.
Right. And work. Kids are mean.
Yeah. And kids are mean. And when you're a big kid, guess what? You can't ever fight back. So, I mean, I remember multiple times you get made fun of. Finally, you blow up and then it's like you're going to the principal's office and you're like, that wasn't my fault. It's like you're bigger. You should have known better. I'm like, you know, words do hurt.
Right.
So, but anyways, so through that, I found my passion, like, to be in sports, because sports were my outlet in the sense of, like, I got made fun of a lot. So, like, you know, in seventh.
I'm going to dominate you.
Yeah. I mean, seventh grade, I handed out a lot of concussions and broken bones.
Like, in what sport?
Football.
Okay.
Because it's like, oh, guess what? Now I don't get in trouble for hurting people.
Yeah.
So, like, all your aggression gets out. So, like, sports became my, like, identity full on, like, this is who I am. And, you know, as you get going further in high school, it's like now you found your sport. Mine was wrestling. So if you'd ever asked me, like, Aaron, describe yourself. I'm a wrestler. Right. So my identity came through my physical abilities and what I could provide physically. And I wrestled in college. Going through college, next thing I know, college is over because, you know, there's no professional wrestling. And I was not that good, even if there was. So that wasn't going to happen. And so I lost myself. I was like, who am I? If someone asked me, like, Aaron, who are you? I was like, I don't know.
It's a great question.
So
any ideas?
Yeah, I got super depressed. Like, I ran to wanting to be a cop because, again, I was thinking my physicalness. Like, I could use my physicalness to help protect people.
Right.
Ran to that. That door was not opening. Like, God did not want that to happen, and for good reasons. But I didn't feel like I was smart enough to do anything else. Like, I just had my physical ability.
Let's go back to mean kids at school.
Yeah.
Like, were you ever, what age were you? Younger. Like, younger. Like, what grade? Do you remember? Like, when it was, like, something that you consciously, like, I don't want to go to school.
Oh, no. I got held back in third grade.
Okay.
So, I had to do third grade twice.
Yeah.
And so, I was at a Christian school, and I realized when my frustrations came out learning like spelling tests because when you're dyslexic and stuff and dysgraphia, like, yeah,
preach it.
So, the one word that's pretty easily sound audible is the F word.
Oh, yeah,
yeah, I wrote that all the way down my list.
Okay,
I got sent to the principal's office, right. I got beat when I got home.
Can we just quick talk about this quick since you got held back at third grade?
Yeah,
do you feel like you're better being held back now? Or, like, the day and age right now in schools, it's like, oh, no, you can't do that. They're going to fourth grade. They're going to fifth grade. And maybe they shouldn't have never done that. So, in your perspective, since you were held back,
yeah,
and now I think there's some people who just keep going because they just, that's what they do.
Yeah.
What do you think is more damaging?
I think it's more damaging to hold someone back.
Okay.
Because, like, you see all your friends go to the next grade. And then you're sitting back and you got held back. So now it is relevant to everybody.
Right.
You're behind.
Right.
And right. So you're like, oh. So where if you could just keep going with your grade, but the school can provide help, you know, off to the side.
Right.
And what you're struggling with. And that's my personal opinion.
That's good.
Yeah.
And then how did your parents help you process, like, and you're doing third grade again?
They're as supportive as they could be. Like, my parents were young. So it's kind of like, all right, this is what we gotta do.
Right.
And they homeschooled me for like the first few years. Wow. So that didn't help at all either.
Okay.
So like, I'm not like, so I know when people talk about homeschool, like everyone do what they want to do. Because of my learning disabilities, it didn't work well for me. So I'm like, no. Because I was like held way, like I had my learning disabilities and then I was like way farther back.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But
you jumped into the public school.
Yeah.
Or private school or whatever
school. Private school and then public school.
Okay.
Because my private school, they didn't have like a resource room. That's why I got held back.
Okay.
Because they didn't
have the resources. So then you ended up pouring into your physical, like, yes, athleticism because, yep, you were going to overcompensate from that.
Yeah.
Feeling of feeling stupid.
Yeah. So I felt like, because I started, you know, you start feeling important to your friends and stuff.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
When you can dominate and help the sports teams, you know, right, instead of like when you feel useless all day. And teachers teach you to treat you different.
Right.
It's, you know, funny too, because like even in school, my kids right now doing well at school, but like they don't want people to know they're doing well at school.
Uh-huh.
But
right,
in sports, it's like, yeah, idolized. Like, yeah, oh yeah, we're doing really good in sports.
Yeah.
Huh.
You know?
It's interesting.
So
it's funny because now that I know you, like, you can tell why you're such a protector. Like, somebody, if you see somebody getting picked on, that's where you'll use your weight.
Yeah,
like, you stop it right now. You shut that down.
It hurts. Like, people don't understand what bullying does, you know, right, and stuff like that. So, like, yeah, you get a little extra passionate about it when you've been through it, and right, nobody's there to stand up for you because nobody stood up for me.
Right.
I take that back. My resource teacher, Lisa Hoffman, like, I give her a shout out if she ever hears this.
Whoop, whoop, Lisa.
Like, she was the first one I saw. She's this tiny little lady, and then she heard people calling me stupid. I don't know, I sat down in the room. I was just kind of head down because you just feel defeated because, yeah, like, you can't do anything about it. Man, that little lady just ran out that room and just, like, went to go, like, you know, dig into those people. And you're like, oh, my gosh. Like, I even get a little emotional thinking about it. I was like, you just stood up for me? Mm-hmm. Like, no one's done that before. They're always just, like, toughen it up. And it's like, oh, hey, that's all I can do. Toughen it up. So.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to, one last question, then I want to move on to Brian or me. I guess.
You.
How has the trial positively, or what is it?
Positively.
Positively, thank you, Brian, affected you in your career today?
So,
or in your life. You can go to life, not just career.
Yeah, life and career, I guess it goes together because like, I feel like our careers that we choose.
It's our life.
Is our life. Like, I have this, like, it could probably be described as unhealthy, but it works in our favor, like, to always keep learning. Like, and also then finding out that, like, the way your brain works with dyslexia, like, we think in, like, a 3D way, so it takes us longer to get to the end of the path, but by the time we get there, we've thought about it in, like, 100 different ways. So... Good. You understand things different. So you start realizing and believing and you get like, oh, this is a blessing. Mm-hmm. The first 12 years of school sucked. But beyond that, it starts becoming a blessing and you never wanting to ever feel that like not knowing something. So you read books, you like constantly learn and won't stop learning because like I don't ever want to feel stupid.
Mm-hmm. Nice. It's good.
Yeah.
Thanks, Aaron.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
Okay. I feel like this is the hot mic. Is it me?
Yeah, I think it's you.
All right, I'm going to talk about probably the first time that I think I hit adversity in my life. And I've hit many other walls, but this is the first one that like brick walled me. You know, like, what? Like, the life isn't revolving around me. And anyway, it was sports. It was football, actually. Love football. My dad's great football player. I watched him growing up playing flag football.
Silver Fox is real.
The Silver Fox is real. And so watching him perform and compete at such a high level, it was just kind of ingrained in me. Like, I wanted to do that. And so junior high, my seventh grade year, I remember coming in. Well, I should probably back up and say, started flag football in Ankeny, Iowa, of all places. So I lived here for a while. My parents had a house on old Ulamar Drive. And they had this special thing where I think they were probably afraid of football, candidly. So you would go full pads and you would play flag football. So for my first grade year, I had full pads on, helmets, mouthpieces. Like we just looked like little helmets out there, shoulder pads, knee pads, all the deal. And then we played flag football. It was super weird. Anyway, I just never was that good at it. Just like a fish out of water, kind of. And then my fifth grade year, my parents built a house in Altoona, Iowa. And so I go there, and then I start playing flag football out there because that's what they had in Altoona and the Southeast Polk kind of district had flag football. So I shedded my pads and went into flag football. And I remember like, oh, I like this sport. Like I can kind of throw it better and blah, blah, blah. So that was my fifth and sixth grade year, I think. Yeah. And then I go to junior high. So now we're in seventh grade, and now guess what they have?
Pads.
Tackle football, right? And they had lightweights and heavyweights. I was a lightweight back then, and I put the pads on, which you have to remember. I've been in pads since first grade, shedded them for 2 years. Now the pads come back on, and this is the first time many of them have ever had pads. So I was like, oh, and I was blowing people up just because I was used to my equipment. Yeah. That makes sense, which gave me confidence, right? Yeah. And so I remember being on the lightweight and I'd be the quarterback and I had a good friend, Mario. And it was just like, okay, things are starting to happen. And then we go to our eighth grade year, same, like really, really just solid program, doing pretty well, have good friends. And I remember the high school coach came down and he looked straight at me and our team. He's like, you guys have potential. And I thought, oh, we're going to do it. You know, like, this is it. This is my calling. I'm going to be an NFL football player. This is going to be amazing.
Yeah.
My dad gets transferred to Sioux City the next like summer. So we're out like, okay. So we go to Sioux City.
Far different than Altoona.
Oh man, far different. This isn't what I'm going to talk about, but the first day at school, my middle school, I get beat up.
Oh no.
Beat up. Yeah. Welcome. And I had like a polo and like khakis on, like, I'm not a gangster, you know? Like,
yeah.
You're throwing up gang signs. And I remember him punching me like, what? Like what's happening? Rough go at it. Okay. So didn't get to play that, but my sister was a senior at that point. No, she was a junior and she transferred to the high school and everybody loved my sister. I was an eighth grader getting beat up and hating my life. And I remember my parents just like working through that stuff. Anyway, so we get out and then I have no friends. After my eighth grade year, right before high school, but my sister's like probably the one of the most popular people, most popular people in high school. Now she's going to be a senior. I'm going to be a freshman. And so I think she just felt bad for me. So she's like, just to have my friends adopt you, you know, like they'll be your friends now. So the first day of freshman orientation, I remember the eighth grade class who are now freshmen are looking at me like, that's the kid who got beat up. And and then all the seniors come in. They're like, hey, Philip, because I've been hanging out with them for the whole summer. I didn't have anybody else to hang out with. And I remember it being like, oh, like maybe he's cool, you know. Anyway, so we start playing football my freshman year, and I remember having like a lights out game, you guys. Like, I'll be honest with you, I was throwing up prayers. They were getting caught for 80-yard touchdowns. I think it was like a 400-yard touchdown, six in touchdowns there, $400 yard passing, six touchdowns, something ridiculous.
Yeah.
And like, I'm not that good, to be honest with you, but everybody else thought I was. And so it gave me confidence, right?
Good receiver goes a long ways.
Exactly. Yeah. So sophomore year, similar, and I got to suit up for varsity football, which is a pretty big deal, right? And the Sioux City West was not good up to this point. And for some reason, we got to go to the playoffs. In the playoffs, we go to play West Des Moines Dowling at Morningside for the playoffs.
Big game.
Big game. And like...
Everybody
again,
wants to be
Sioux City West is like, who are they again? Like, I've never seen them be good at all. And this year we ended up being decent. So we go out in the field. It was this college field that we were on. And again, I'm just a sophomore. And I remember like coming back in the locker room, like, these guys are the biggest guys I've ever seen. Like, where did they recruit these guys? Like, they're from college. Anyway, we end up beating them. And I remember thinking, like, how in the world did we beat them? And I didn't play at all, for the record. I'm only on the sideline. And so the next year I get transferred to Dowling High School because my parents get moved back to West Des Moines for my dad's job. Okay. So I get like a front row seat of like, how did we beat them? Anyway, long story short, they had all technical ability. All Sioux City West had was heart. And the reason why we beat them is because we had heart, no technical ability, but it just seemed like we care. Like our arms were hanging off our shoulder. Like we're going to win, you know?
Yeah.
And so I go to Sioux City, and that was the first time, like, I'm not playing a dime, like, a, not even a snap. And the coach's son was a year younger than me, and then he had a really good friend that was a quarterback. And so that junior started playing when I was a senior, which killed me. Mm-hmm. And I remember just being devastated and thinking, like, oh, I can overwork this. Like, I can do better, you know? And the coach even brought me in. He was like, hey, if we had our first game tomorrow, Matt McCree would play. And I'm like, what? Like, Matt McCree's been playing baseball all these summers when we're doing 3-a-days, and he would still play over me? And in my mind back then, it was like, well, I'll just work harder, you know? Right. Anyway, so I feel like that was the first time I hit adversity where, like, it's not going to go your way. Mm-hmm. And it was like, the door shut. And there was no, like, openings. Which was hard to comprehend. Like I was, that was me, you know? Anyway, long story short, I never played another down in high school, really any. And, that was when my tackle football career was over and it devastated me. And I would say it devastated my parents just watching their son go through this because it was an outlet that I used to have that kind of shut down. And man, to this day, I am so grateful that I did not keep playing. And when I left Southeast Polk, that was when Kyle Orton took over and started playing, and he was a grade under me. So Kyle Orton had a great NFL career, by the way, played at Purdue.
Oh, yeah, he played everywhere.
He played everywhere. And I remember the first time I saw him on Monday Night Football, his face, I was like, are you kidding me? And like the bitterness, you know, like I could have been that. But like, guys, for the record, I couldn't be that. But, you know, you just think.
I've seen you play. You're a good quarterback.
I like to play, but not that good. But I'm so grateful thinking of like all the hits you could have taken
It makes you appreciate some of these guys.
It makes you appreciate it. Right. And so that was probably my first time of hitting that adversity and then also seeing like the positive things that can come out of it and knowing that I probably don't know my best path forward. And if I were to write my story, I would have been such a spoiled little kid.
Yeah. But like, how long did it take you to see those like benefits from it?
Long time. Yeah. Yeah, even when I saw his even when I saw his face on, because I thought I would process through it, and like, oh, I guess I'm kind of grateful. And then I saw his face on Monday Night Football, and I'm,
I'm not over it.
I'm not over it. Yeah, I'm a little upset. So,
honey, are you seeing this?
Yeah, Anyway, that was one. And man, even to this day, I'm super grateful. I probably would never have met my wife. Should not have my kids. You know, like, yeah, it was just a whole different trajectory. Yeah. So
it's interesting that both of you had kind of
sports,
the sports physical related challenges. I won't share mine with sports.
Brian was a pretty good pitcher. I would say that. That's where he's alluding to.
Yeah, who knows? But are you done, or is that?
No, that's it. That's it. Okay. That's it.
To this day, Philip still plays flag football with his dad, by the way.
Right.
And they're a nasty combo. There's a lot of people with losses in their ledger to the Ramsey duo. So,
oh, man.
That's great. Fun to watch. I've been thinking about what challenges to talk about. I think a lot of people know that I'm divorced. And so I think that's an obvious one. But the one I think I kind of want to talk about is actually one that Aaron kind of helped me see. So I'm going to go in a different direction.
But, do it. Do it.
So when I got into this business, I always knew I wanted to be in this business from like probably 12 or 13 years old. My mom is still in this business, more on the operational side. And I've always had a fascination with numbers. I've just always been around this business. So it was very clear at a very young age that this is what I wanted to do. And, you know, I started in the business. I quit my safe job in consulting in December of 2008. There may or may not have been a Great Depression in December of 2008. So starting in that was actually probably the best time to get started because everything was upended. But yeah, it was like early on, I think 2 or 3 weeks in, my, you know, ex-wife's father passes away abruptly. Mm. And so, you know, you kind of take a few weeks off of work to like work through that, lead your family through that and provide. And, you know, going from like a day job of salary and all of that and benefits and cash flow to this business, which is like 100% commission. And I wasn't with like a principal or I was with some just dudes, you know, like, and I got into a situation where I thought I was going to get more referrals and leads and there's going to be some partnering there. And it wasn't, it was like an empty office and man,
a desk,
you know, as much as we want, as much as we want to say like we're financial advisors or wealth managers or all these other buzzwords, we're in sales.
All right.
You know, and you have to know how to dial the phone. You have to know how to build rapport. You have to know how to do all these things. And I was not good at that. Still, I don't really think that I am good at that. And so early on, I ended up going and working for someone because I was like, I got to get a job. This isn't working. Like the writing is on the wall that this isn't going to happen in the current state of things. And so in that, it was, yeah, really a growth moment. I think back to my one thing I'll talk about in sports. I played tennis, you know, so I didn't have the prowess on the football field.
And you were a pitcher. You were a pitcher.
So, but yeah, I mean, but for the most part, my tennis career was more illustrious, I guess, than my baseball career. But my singles record was like 500. Well, in tennis, you get to play both. You get to play singles and you get to play doubles. It was kind of fun. My doubles record, like with my partner, we were killing it. We were like 800. You know, we went to state and did all that. But so I've always been a team guy. And this business is lonely. I mean, it is lonely. I mean, you want to talk about a challenge, be a financial advisor by yourself. I don't even care if you're with like Edward Jones or one of these other companies.
Lonely.
If you're just out on your own, like it is lonely.
Right.
And so, yeah, I think, you know, kind of fast forward, I switched